Welcome to Geek Actually, episode 84 for the 15th of May, 2010. I am David McVeigh, and we are back here again. And this time, we have somebody new in the house. So we'll get our introductions straight away out of the way. First of all, we have Josh Philpott. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man.
You make me feel like dancing.
Oh, Josh is destroying
the studio. He's hitting
shit at me. It's not my fault that mic stand is really bad.
All right, and we're also joined for the first time on Geek Actually, but not the first time in the studio because you've been on platforms a few times.
Once or twice.
Nathan Lawrence. Now, Nathan, tell people about you that may not be familiar with you.
I am predominantly a tech journalist, I guess you'd say. So I do a little bit of games, but mostly technology stuff. At the moment, I'm currently reviewing a buttload of GPS units, a plasma TV, and one of the new Samsung LED TVs, which is very sexy.
Is this the 3D model?
3D fails.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not talk about that, but the 2D part, phenomenal.
I actually got the demo at JB the other day, a 3D TV, and it was actually pretty impressive, I must say.
My eyes hurt,
and I actually found there was a slight flicker, and I think it's because of the shutter effect of the glasses.
I had the flicker, and it was also blurry. The thing was, I demoed them previously because I had to do some articles for Samsung earlier, but it somehow the technology's gotten worse, and we thought we were too close, so we moved away, but it still had blurring.
I found it had a halo as well. That was the,
So
it had the halo effect, and it was
the guy
slightly
tried
flickering.
To tell us at the store
it was
that
the fluoro lights causing the flicker.
Well, we had lights on and lights off, and yeah.
I don't think it's ready for prime time yet, quite frankly.
No, it's first gen.
Yeah, it's first gen. I think it needs to go a little bit down the track before it's going to be taken mainstream. However, it may not go that far because there's already health concerns coming out about it.
Well, it was interesting, dude. I panicked in the store because I work in the IT section, and it was dead quiet, and I walked up because there was this bunch of kids looking at the screen, and they were commenting on the fact that they couldn't see properly. So I grabbed the glasses, and I gave it to them, and they started watching, and the guy from the TV section just came out of nowhere and just grabbed them off it and went, you can't let kids use these. They're dangerous. And I'm like, what?
The warning labels are extreme. It's not just no kids. I think it's seriously pregnant women.
Interestingly enough, we're one of the only countries that's carrying those warnings. Our government that actually put those warnings on there, because I was reading an article. No, I wasn't reading. Sorry, I was listening to Buzz Out Loud, actually, and they were saying they made comment on our warnings, saying, boy, this is really amazing the Australians are carrying all these warnings. So we're looking into it because the big health concerns, we actually talked about this on the show about a month and a half ago, the big health concerns actually come from an Australian scientist. Who basically turned around and said that this could cause problems with depth perception and all sorts of other things because of extended watching of the 3D. And he says, at a cinema, you go to a 3D movie, it's over in 2 hours, you're done. Watching a television regularly every single day for hours at a time, this could cause permanent damage to our eyesight.
Now, it's interesting you should say that because Samsung specifically was talking about this idea of we're not selling 3D TV as this thing that you should be watching 24/7. They keep pushing this idea of event.
Yeah, except the networks
TV.
Aren't seeing that. The networks are all talking about creating dedicated 3D channels.
Yeah, yeah. So that's,
you know, in America, they're already starting to talk about a high def dedicated documentary channel that will be showing nothing but 3D documentaries. Obviously, the IMAX stuff, 24 hours a day.
Oh, God.
You know, and then all your sporting events are going to be starting to go 3D. As this scientist pointed out, and we're kind of rehashing something we talked about before, but as this scientist pointed out, they are diving into this 3D television without actually doing any research, without looking at what could possibly be wrong with this. And he brought up, he was actually one of the research scientists on Sega VR.
Okay.
And he said that these were the same concerns they brought up to Sega about the Sega VR helmets when they were actually creating them, and that's why they disappeared. Quietly, without any fanfare, because they were saying, this is going to cause problems.
So this is going to be bad, because all of the major ones are obviously bringing it out. The 2010 will be the year of 3D TV. But what I find most interesting is they're already looking into what's called auto-stereoscopic 3D, which is 3D without glasses.
Yeah.
Which is the future, which, like you know, call me a conspiracy theorist, but like, you know, water-powered cars and things like that will disappear for the next 5 to 10 years before it's revolutionized, because there's people who already have demos going on tiny screens.
It's
feasible, but it's not financially feasible for these companies who are starting to say, oh, this is 3D TV as you know it, you've got the glasses, but they're better glasses. And it's like, well, why aren't you just putting money into an auto stereoscopic solution, which is obviously better.
And that would actually be better, because then you're not completely focused on one thing.
And you can switch it
thing.
On and off,
that's
obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
So it'd be very interesting. I think 3D TV's got a ways to go. Also, it is way, way, way too expensive.
Yes.
Considering
not only when
glasses.
You break down... Yeah, exactly. When you break past the actual TV itself, which I think the last one I saw sold went for about 4.5, you know, 5, and that was a relatively cheap one. And then on top of that, he bought 4 pairs of glasses, and the 4 pairs of glasses were $140 each.
Yeah, and what really stings is there are certain brands, I'm not sure which brands they are, that are actually selling without any glasses.
Yes.
I know that Samsung, I think, comes with
Samsung
one pair.
Samsung comes with two now.
Two pairs,
they're doing two with Monsters vs. Alien. Sorry, I'm not trying to plug them, but I just know them from
you
recent
You don't work
times.
For Samsung, it's
no,
all right.
No, no. I know they are, but I think... The other ones are only talking about, they don't want to talk about it yet, which tends to suggest that they're not going to.
Because I think
to.
In the States where they did their big launch, I think Panasonic is selling without glasses. And so you've got to buy the TV and then you've got to then fork out, you know, $130-odd US per pair of glasses to go with the TV. And the glasses are not cross-compatible. So if you have one brand
about to say that.
And somebody else has another one and you say, come over and watch a show, I think you can't use your glasses
so
on their TV.
What you essentially got to do is, like, buy glasses in the sort of this looking forward mentality of, well, are my mates going to be come over, and are they adults? Because you've got different head sizes as well.
Cyrus in our chat room is basically says that if you want 3D, go outside.
It's got amazing depth in the studio, Dave. I love
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. We're in 3D here. You guys don't see
We're
it.
We're not coming
we
out in 3D, but believe us.
All right, let's move on, because that was one
That
long,
was my intro, sorry.
Long-ass introduction.
Oscar wind-up speech.
All right, so just for to let the audio listeners know who pulled this down off of iTunes, you can watch us live around 12 p.m. Today we're only like 8 minutes late, 9 minutes late, whatever it is. Sometimes we're a little bit later. Sometimes we're on time.
I was about to say, not really.
But you can watch us 12 p.m. Saturdays, UTC plus 10 Australian Eastern Standard Time. And that is actually at geekactually.com/live. What are we talking about today, other than 3D TVs, obviously? This is basically your weekly dose of geek. We talk a bit of tech. We talk a bit of movies. We sometimes throw games in there. This week, Apple security woes again. I don't know what is up with Apple at the moment. Australian federal government screws the pooch again and again and again and again and again and again. So we'll come back to that as well. And entertainment. Rambo may not be as dead as we originally previously announced. And Kick-Ass writer... and the director of Kick-Ass are both on board for X-Men. And Shia LaBeouf has come out and promises that Transformers 3 won't suck. Not quite those words, but...
He'll give you money back.
Wait, Transformers 3?
Yeah, they're working on it right now, Josh looks at me like a little look of horror on his face. Yeah, he promises that it's going to be not as bad as the second one was his...
It's pretty...
Almost his quote. Yeah. Almost his quote. We'll come back to that.
How can he even promise that? All he does is one part of the movie.
I know.
Maybe he had creative control.
All I can say is, has he talked to Michael Bay lately? then we're going to take a little trip into Sherwood Forest, and we're going to check in on the Ridley Scott Russell Crowe love affair.
That's right.
Because that seems to be in full swing at the moment, and I really do need. Feel that, like in Friends, they need to take a break. they really need to take a break. But we will review the new Ridley Scott film, Robin Hood. First, though, we're going to get ourselves into a little bit of tech. And I actually tried to get a graphic for this, and for some reason it didn't load onto the board, so I don't know what it is. But we have a lovely iPad graphic that we bring up in these situations, but I don't have it today. iPad pricing this week was finally announced for Australia. However... There's a kicker. All right, so the iPad pricing is... Oh, my sheets are all out of order. Isn't that nice? The iPad pricing, it starts at $629, which is pretty much exactly what Josh and I predicted, actually. We said $650, but $629 is the starting price.
Apple profits.
And funnily enough, we actually... I was talking with Psydog. Is Psydog in our chat room today?
No.
Psydog and I were having one of them was having a talk with me in the chat room, and we were talking about the Apple tax, and we were talking about the fact that in Australia we get completely stung on Apple products, and we actually started to do some calculations, and Steve Jobs himself came out this week to address it and said, the reason why you guys get charged about an extra 10% to the Americans...
Holding for the bullshit, continue.
It's called the GST.
Oh. oh, what's that?
because in America, they don't have a GST, okay. and sales tax is not included. If you buy an iPad in California, it is $499 starting price plus tax.
Right.
So in Australia, we have to include the GST component into it, so it's actually the exchange rate plus GST. So we are actually being stiffed by our own tax. So the actual Apple tax that I think Cydog actually worked out a spreadsheet on this whole thing, and he actually worked it out. It was actually only about a 1-point-something% increase over the American price. It actually wasn't that high.
Okay.
We are being stiffed by our own federal tax. Anyway, so the prices for the Wi-Fi models are $629, going up to the 32-gig version, $759, going up to the 64-gig version, $879. It gets a little bit steep after a while. I actually think the 16-gig Wi-Fi model is the one I would go for if I was going to buy one. I can't afford to buy one. We are taking donations. Donations. go to geekachi.com and we can start an iPad fund. My birthday is in June, so
plenty of time, guys.
Now, the other thing I was going to say is we got stiffed, though, which is, first of all, in America, the 3G model of iPad has no contracts. AT&T basically set up this beautiful system where if you pay $29, I think it is a month, you get unlimited data, no contracts. Stop at any time, start at any time. Yep. You can pick it up, drop it off any way you want to. In Australia, we're locked into 1- and 2-year contracts. So and not only are you locked into contracts, but they're data plans. So I think the maximum data plan is 6 gig on the iPad. So we get stiffed there. We also get stiffed by the fact that if you didn't pre-order it the day of the pre-orders, which was on May 10th, which would then get you your iPod by your iPad by May 28th, you can't get one until mid-June now.
Okay, can I just ask, though, what were you just saying about the internet plans, though?
The internet plans are locked contracts, and the maximum data fee, I think, is 6 gig.
So, and they're not shaped, are they?
I don't know if that's actually true, dude, because we have the pricing at the moment in store for the plans that we'll be running through Telstra.
This is Telstra's plan. I read their
report. There's 3, 6, and I think 12 as well. And the pricing 12. Is actually better than their data caps for their phones.
Huh? Cool. So, all right, well, we stand
price
corrected.
Price-wise, anyway.
We'll find out more about that, because it was actually a Telstra report that I saw. We have not heard about Optus pricing yet. Right. And considering Optus carries the iPhone, I assume they're also going to carry iPad pricing. We haven't heard about Optus, but Optus, if iPhone is anything to go by, they didn't announce their plans until literally 2 days before the release of the device. So,
very bit of sneaky.
Yeah, a little bit sneaky. And Vodafone was even worse than that. So we'll wait to see. The thing is, the other question is, how many of our servers, because in America only one company does it, which is AT&T, how many of our people actually deal with micro SIMs? Because the iPad uses the new micro SIM format, and that kind of limits them to who's dealing with micro SIMs anyway. So, okay, that's iPad. Let's move on. The best piece of news, I think, today, and I'm going to bring this up. This is a bit of a throwback. Watch our headphones here. This is going to be kind of loud, guys. Okay, the reason we bring up the great internet tech war is because it's on again, and this time the front has moved. We seem to have taken the war completely to the mobile arena. A few weeks ago, Apple basically leveled a lawsuit against HTC, basically saying that they had something along the lines of 20 patent infringements on Apple product. Nokia leveled patent lawsuits against Apple, basically said you've got like dozens of them against you, and now HTC has turned around and leveled a patent case against Apple.
I'm so confused. Can you please give me the nitty gritty of this? Because I'm a little lost on how exactly a phone that comes out after iPhone is suing them for patent infringement.
Well, actually, yeah. Okay, so see, the thing, the trick here is you have to understand that the patents are about concepts, and these concepts they're not necessarily saying the iPhone has copied the HTC. What they're saying is that one gesture, and I'm not kidding, it comes down to this. One of the patent infringements that Apple claimed against HTC was the slide to unlock gesture. Was patented.
Okay? Pretty much.
So it just goes crazy. I mean, this is the thing. We're talking about concepts and ideas. And really, I think it came down to the fact that nobody wants to fight these battles because they're really hard to prove. They're really hard to deal with. And so they hold off. And I think Nokia fired the first shot. They fired a shot at Apple. And Apple said, well, if we're going to have to defend our patents, then somebody else is going to pay for this too.
Yeah.
Now, in effect, you know damn well, and this is where it comes down to the major tech war, you know damn well that this battle is actually about Apple and Google. Apple wants to kill the Android operating system because the Android operating system this week came out as actually outselling the iPhone in the United States. Now, Apple's already countered those figures and said, yeah, not quite. Let's look at the figures realistically. Worldwide, we have sold many more handsets, you know, and so forth. And we are also on the edge of releasing a new iPhone.
Mm.
And we're going to see huge sales again. So there's a lot of people waiting, like me, for the new iPhone to come out before we upgrade. So it's a little bit fudged figures. But the point is that Android is now a legitimate threat to iPhone's dominance.
Yes.
And they want to take on Google. But Google's a big player.
Definitely.
So it's much easier to go after somebody like HTC, prove your case, win that one, and then basically say, see, we won.
Yeah.
You really want to take us
back
on
off,
now?
Bitches.
You know, we set an order of... they're taking HTC, and HTC fired at them, so they're firing back, right? So basically, I think this is going to be very interesting. Apple filed in March alleging infringement of 20 iPhone patents, including user interface, underlying architecture, and hardware. So they're really having a jab at the... Because HTC has just released a whole new set of phones. I think the Evo is one of them,
yes,
and so forth. And they're glorious, beautiful-looking phones. Mm. And I think Apple's going, hey, wait a minute, you know? We're gonna have to have words about, you know, your touch screen, your gestures, your this, your that. So it'll be very interesting to see where this all goes. I actually think it's all just going to disappear because usually with these patent cases, people just pay lots of money.
Well, think about. I'm sure you guys heard about the Wi-Fi thing, which I can't even remember who it was in Australia. I should remember. Some Australian industry holds the patent for Wi-Fi.
Oh, I did hear about this.
All of these Uber companies in the world, anyone you can think of who says with Wi-Fi. Is
paying
for this, and it doesn't really make headline news, but I did a story on it a while ago on PopSci website, and they have been paid so far billions of dollars, with more expected, because every product you can think of, even your smartphones, you know, PlayStation goes, all of these sort of little products that people don't think about beyond computers have Wi-Fi,
yeah,
and that someone holds a patent and they've called it in, and instead of letting it become a big thing that gets all over the news, they're like, okay, yep, you've got it, fair enough. Have some money.
Well, there was a case. I mean, that's patent law. I mean, there is argument as well. The patent law has gone berserk, and there is a law that is actually stifling innovation because you really can't. I think it's some buzz out loud again. Somebody actually said we're really waiting for somebody to come out with a new phone that's shaped like an eggplant or something like that. Just something that's completely different because really, it's all much the same now, and everybody is paying everybody the same thing, and it's all everybody's, you know, lobbying on each other's patents constantly. And you sit there and go, it's gotten to a point where are we stifling innovation by everybody holding on to these little, I mean, slide to unlock.
See, that's ridiculous.
It should not be patentable.
Big things,
yes.
Major entirely. Technology, something like Wi-Fi,
multi-touch touchscreen, patent that.
Yep. No.
You can't patent, you know. Pinch to shrink.
That's actually been patented, and it wasn't by Apple.
No, it wasn't.
And I think they're just waiting in the wings to get.
No, as far as I'm
money.
Aware of that, didn't Apple pay a huge sum of money to actually pay that case out? Somebody actually has already taken.
Well, it wasn't just Apple though. It was any touch phone that required navigation by way of touch. Again,
wow!
You're
but
talking
can
about
you imagine
idea.
How far that would go? Because I mean, nowadays you've got like the touch pads
touch
computers.
LCDs.
Well, the Apple new Apple pads on the MacBooks, which are all multi-touch, it's exactly the same technology.
Yeah, but dude, I'm meaning every laptop,
well,
netbook, everything.
Well, I mean, you really
want to
get really ridiculous
this.
About it. There is actually a pending court case that's been sitting in the wings for 30 odd years. The guy who invented markup languages for the internet has been fighting for a long time to say everybody is using my stuff.
Mm.
You know, this concept of hyperlinking. Was actually his, you know?
It just gets a little bit too
and it gets far, it gets to a little point where it's like, well, it's common usage. Everybody does it. Can you really argue that? And then you've also got the argument of prior art. And prior art is one of those really odd ones where people go, you can't have a patent on that because there was prior art on this. And it may not have been a patent, but there was prior art to prove that it was around before. It just gets really messy. The whole thing about patents is just... I think personally, that it just kind of stifles innovation on everything.
It should be for inventions and not for concepts, really.
That's good. I like that. But isn't that more trademark and copyright?
I don't know. I think it's a bit different if you're putting millions or billions of dollars into creating some technology that's going to take you 4 to 5 years to do.
Yep.
I think then definitely you should be able to patent it and say, someone's not going to steal my work while I'm doing it and basically reap the benefits of my technology. But like you've said, a slide to unlock, patent concept? That's ridiculous.
No, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, no.
It's like, look, in filmmaking, we're going to get to film and television later, but in film, there is actually a thing that says you cannot copyright an idea. This is why when Indiana Jones came out, when Raiders of the Lost Ark came out in 1982, we suddenly had Alan Quatermain in the Lost City of Gold. We had lots of heroes wearing leather jackets and hats, you know? Yeah. And if set in the 1930s, you can't copyright an idea, you know? And this is why you always get imitators. He's going to say, God, how did they get away with that? Well, because it's just an idea. As long as you're not copywriting, as long as you're not copying the words, the plot, the story, the definite details, you can rip off an idea all you want, you know? So, and there was a case recently, I think it was in Australia, where people were actually saying, you know, they're trying to sue somebody because they were making fun of something. You say you cannot actually fight a copyright case against satire.
In Australia particularly, yes, because there's laws defending that. Yeah. So you can take the mickey out of pretty much anything as long as it's satire.
Thank God.
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's a big issue with Apple at the moment about that, with political cartoons and stuff being rejected from the iTunes store. And people are saying, you can't do that. Freedom of speech, dude. People are allowed to mock, especially public figures. America actually has laws about mocking public figures. You're allowed to because they are in the public eye. You know, as long as it's not as long as it's not defamatory.
Wow.
Yes.
As long as you're not actually hurting their image. This is why politicians and stuff, you can do political cartoons and stuff because they are a public figure. You are allowed to satirize and parody those public figures. Anyway, let's move on. We're running way long. All right, so what the hell is up with Apple security? We reported here on this show about a month ago, the whole Gizmodo getting the phone, $5,000, paying for it, dismantling it, and all that sort of stuff. And we sat there and went, oh, you know, how the hell did they get this phone? That's really amazing.
We did like half a show.
We did a whole tech show on this. Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, Apple security is always so tight. You know, how did this ever happen? Well, the iPhone 4G, which is the next model iPhone, this is the one that Gizmodo got their hands on.
Yes.
Another one has turned up, and it's now in Vietnam.
Good morning, Vietnam.
So another one has turned
up. Oh, dude, tell me that's not the back. Tell me not in the background that's not his shop or something
probably,
like that.
Probably. What I love is the fact that they weren't even shy about it. You know, Gizmodo, they said they dismantled it, but they made sure they didn't actually hurt it at all so they could put it all back together. Nah. The Vietnamese, they tore the sucker apart. They tore the sucker apart. They actually got to the chip. They actually took off the metal plate. It does look like it's a micro A4 chip, the same chip that's in the iPad. So this thing is going to be rocket fast. Mm. So they literally gutted it, pulled it apart, had a look at it. They even went so far as to say, let's show this thing off on video. Hang on, where is he? Where's our man? We'll just lower his volume because he's all in Vietnamese. But he's sitting there showing it off. And he actually at one point holds it up to an iPhone 4G.
Yeah.
3G to 3GS to compare sizes and stuff. So these guys really went to town on this thing. And all I could think is that what is going on with Apple? How is this stuff just slipping out their door?
Particularly after they've had this first thing with Gizmodo, which is such a big deal.
Do you think, like, I mean, okay, let's take aside the possibility of the fact that, you know, like everyone's saying, that this might be a, you know, engineered kind of a situation and that they're, you know, putting this out. Is there, maybe this is some sort of, like, bizarre, like, product testing kind of a thing where they just throw net?
That's actually been speculated. I noticed that Cyrus in our chat room has actually said free advertising as well, you know, and all this. And there was a lot of speculation. Did Apple release these things on purpose so that people would start getting excited? It's not Apple's MO.
Exactly. I was about to say, unless
dude, no, I hear you with that, right? But when, look, you have a company with one of the greatest, you know, leaps forward in phone technology. Like, I mean, people can argue all they want, non-multi-touching, blah, 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 not interested. What I'm saying is the actual phone itself, right? The amount of people, when you're walking down the street, that you will see wearing those white headphones, the amount of people that have this technology became standard use, right? That's how powerful this thing is. When you're bringing out the next model of this, you're going to be worried about whether or not you can pull that off again.
But no, but Apple's never been worried about that.
No. But dude, we don't know the internal
Apple
workings.
Loves the keynotes. They love to get up and say, and they hate
little rumors that come out. They are very quick to question this direct.
But this isn't like, I mean, it's not going to be that way every time.
Yeah,
like,
but
not,
Steve Jobs is back, baby.
Look at the iPad.
Look at the
well.
iPad. Yeah.
I mean, that.
And that was
but Steve Jobs doesn't like buttons, yet it's got buttons. I'm saying, dude, not everything can be that, you know, guaranteed.
I just don't think that this follows Apple's MO at all.
I'm saying as someone that's worked in business, it is the best concept you could possibly do, right? If you let something out like that and you just sit back and watch the opinions, the comments, everything that comes out about these videos, all the tech journalists making their comments on it and stuff like this, you get thousands of free hours worth of work that you can wade through and go, hey, well, look, that may be not a good idea. Let's remove that. They've got months until they, you know, well, not months.
Well, it's being announced in, what, 4 weeks.
So. Exactly. So, look, they've got 4 weeks that they can, you know, finish up the last few things. It's like a last little bit of quality testing for them. I'm just saying. I reckon it's an awesome concept.
What we have found out about this phone is that now that we've seen a second one in the wild, we can confirm now that the Gizmodo phone was pretty much legit. It wasn't a concept. Some people are asking whether the case was a concept. No, that is the new design, the flat edges, the stainless, the aluminium design. I love it. I think it's a nice industrial design. It looks really good. It does have a front-facing camera. It does have a flash. It's got a faster chip. Its battery is 18% of the contents of inside the device, and they have actually said that the battery life will be considerably
more.
So if the iPad is anything to go by, the iPad apparently has something like 12 to 14 hours of battery with movies playing.
Yeah, that's good.
So it's phenomenal. So hopefully we will see some definite improvements on this. I would like to see the camera increase because a lot of phones are now going out with 5 and 8 megapixel cameras. It would be nice to see the iPhone. If they're putting a flash on it particularly, it would be nice to see if it had like a 5 or 6 megapixel camera. I think this is looking very interesting. What is interesting as well is I've also gone with the micro SIM.
Yeah.
So I think it's, I don't know what's going on
with micro SIM. Hey, dude, if there's ever a good place to start launching something like the micro SIM, it's like start with Apple.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like the whole flash debacle that's going on at the moment. It's like if anybody's going to bring flash down, it's going to be Apple
and Microsoft.
And Microsoft.
Don't forget,
now.
Man. Yeah, we've got the Voltron shit going on, man. These guys have come together. The two of them are
joining forces at the moment.
No.
All right. So that's Apple security. Now, the R18. Now, I put a rant on the website today. A few days ago. If you want to go to geekactually.com and read my rant, that's fine. I'm not going to do the whole rant again.
Brutal.
But really, I'm just going to say, what the fuck is up with the federal government? You know, all right, so let's have a look at our federal government at the moment. All right, we've got an election coming up, all right, and it seems to me that Kevin Rudd's government is so absolutely petrified of this election because everything is failing on them lately that they are trying to soften it completely. Now, my wife, who is very politically minded, basically said what they're doing, though, is going to hurt them in the long run because people are going to see it as weakness and they're going to see it as changing your mind. Mm. You know, the details on this. First of all, the ETS got dropped because it got a little bit controversial. The whole pink bat things in roofs got dropped because it got controversial. Rather than staying there and saying, let's fix it, it got controversial, they dropped it. So those two straight off the bat. Then the internet censorship filter. Now, I'm not complaining, mind you, but the internet censorship filter, which they have been going on over for 2 years, looks like it may have been shelved for the moment.
It was always going to die.
It was always going to die. But the point is, just before an election is not the time to shelve this. Agreed. Because they're going to sit there and go, oh, so you're just pissing out on that one as well, you know? And now we have the R18 plus rating for games. Now, we're not going to go into the whole merits of gaming and everything else because we're not really a gaming podcast, but the point is it comes down to a freedoms issue and it comes down to the issue that as adults we should be allowed to play whatever we want to play. Now, it is insane that we are the only country in the world that does not have an adult rating for games.
New Zealand has one, god damn it.
I know. So we look at it and go, okay, so we want to get this into place. Now, only in Australia, can I say, only in Australia could too much interest in something make it fail.
Oh, man.
Right? Because they received the 89,000 signatures. They received thousands of submissions on the discussion paper. The attorneys general went to have their meeting, which is where they get this put in. And their first reaction is, oh, the results seem to be a bit skewed because too many gamers got involved.
This is what I love because, like, we've been watching this and doing this basically since it started. I mean, even before it really hit really hard, I was working in a game store. So, you know, like, even at that level, I was still the guy standing at the counter going, hey, if you guys want to do something about this, stop pussyfooting around and get online and sign some goddamn petitions. We've been doing that for years, and it literally was. I remember the first, you know, press releases and stuff like that back in the day when people were turning around to us as gamers and going, oh, okay, well, if you want an R18 rating, stop being childish about it and get out there and do some work and get out there. This is what our government told us to do. We got told to get involved and write petitions.
It stings even more when a survey was done last year by Interactive Australia 09, that in this survey it actually figured out that about 68% of Australians are gamers of one description or another. Mm-hmm. So for them to say that 86% of the submissions to the discussion paper on the R18 plus rating came from special interest groups, the gamers, you have to ask yourself, we're talking about the majority of the population is represented here. Mm-hmm. All right. And also the other factor that I really wanted to rant on, and I ranted in my article, was of course the special interest groups are going to be the most interested in this. It affects them. If you actually were doing a new policy that was going to affect the farms, you would expect that 86% of the respondents are going to be farmers or people in agriculture.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to have city people going, I don't really understand the whole thing about water tanks. You know,
why would they get involved? It's like,
absolutely. And you sit there and go, this is affecting a certain subset of people, right? We don't actually care what the other people are saying because they're not going to play the games anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's I just get so furious at this because as I pointed out in the article, we played by their rules.
Yeah.
And as soon as we did everything by their rules, they turn around and want to change the rules.
The rules. Yep.
Because
exactly.
They didn't get the answer they wanted.
Yep.
Exactly. You know? Like, I mean, dude, it is so funny because, like, if they're saying, if they're sitting there and they're going to come back to us and say, oh, it's a core group and we need more from the other people, the problem is, as you said, number one, so people aren't going to be interested. So how are we going to get any information out of these people? They're not going to go out and sign petitions.
No.
They're not going to get interested. Why? Because they don't give a shit.
That's right.
And, like, that's what breaks it down and annoys me the most. But then there's the other part that I can only sit there and go, okay, so you're saying the people that responded to this thing were pro, so we're angry about that. It's like, well, the parents were the ones that came in and signed these about kids and stuff like that, and that was what you were worried about in the first place. Where exactly are you wanting to get these votes from? Who are you going to ask?
Yeah, and look,
the article that they put in the thing, they were saying Christian groups and stuff like that. It's like, oh.
Yeah, well, they said they want to now broaden the scope of the discussion. They want to be, I already thought it was nationwide. I don't know how we're broadening this, but they want to go and they want to talk to things like Christian groups and so forth, as Josh says.
And
what business do they have in this?
I'm not Christian. No, dude, exactly. More than that, though, not what business do they have? What right do they have to decide my fucking responsibilities in this country?
Damn straight. And the point that I put in the article, which is, one of the arguments that kept coming back, Atkinson used to use this all the time, which was, yes, you can control the sale of them with the R rating, but once it gets into the house, who's going to stop the kid from playing the R rated game? And my argument is, we already have R rated and sometimes X rated DVDs and Blu-rays in the house. We're not assuming that the kids are immediately going to watch all those. Parents control that sort of stuff. And what about all those other legal activities that you must be over 18 to do? There are parents who drink in front of their children. There are parents who smoke in front of their children.
Oh, yeah.
These are activities that you must be over 18. And what, they're not worried that the child's going to sneak a cigarette out of the pack while it's in the house? The only people who are qualified to raise their children and police their children are the parents.
Agreed.
You know?
And that applies to the internet content filter as well. I mean, that was always my
argument. Absolutely.
Why is it that there's supposedly all of these parents complaining and saying, this is such an issue that the government needs to control it, when you've got your 8-year-old child with a broadband connection, a computer in their room, and no net monitoring stuff. Like, that's just bad parenting. I mean, I'm not a parent. I don't think I need to be a parent to say that that's just stupid. Mm. I mean, you stumble
my
across
my son goes stuff. Off and plays on his computer, but I always know what he's doing. You know? And I know the activities that he's doing. And if it looked like he was starting to do, like, he actually got involved in some chat rooms, right? Mm. And my first thought and my wife both thought, oh, that's probably not the thing to do. But then we went and looked what the chat rooms are. He's in Lego filmmaker chat rooms talking to other 12 and, 10 and 12-year-olds about techniques for shooting stop motion Lego films. I have no problem with him being in those chat rooms, you know? My son is also smart enough to know that if somebody starts saying something inappropriate, because I say inappropriate things all the time, he knows what's inappropriate.
Because you've taught him that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. So, again, it comes back to parenting.
Parenting, what a concept!
Like, and why should the government be controlling parenting? That's just ludicrous. That becomes a nanny state, and yeah, I hate this country.
It's interesting you bring up that aspect, because I actually had a customer ring me up about 3 days ago, and their question literally was, it's like, my son's getting into some stuff, you know, it's a bit of a personal conversation for him to ring me up and tell, but he's like, my son's getting into some stuff I'm not happy about. I want something to stop him from being able to do this. And I just turned around on the phone and said, there is no way that you can do that apart from talk to your son.
Hmm.
Like I said, you can buy NetNanny software. All it's going to do is make your internet slow and not work. You can use filters like mm-hmm. Apple's and stuff like that. I have learned from great experience because we have these set up on the ones that work that they don't work because all they do is sense of random sites like ours.
Well, the NetNanny software that John Howard actually released, the free to all the Australian people, blocked the White House site because the person's name was Dick Cheney.
How dare he?
You know? And George Bush.
So it didn't have context for
this. That's right. So it didn't have context. Anyway, Octane in our chat room has asked, did any of us watch the Q&A that was on ABC TV the other day, which was a debate about this? I actually did, and I actually watched the Four Corners thing before it as well, which was about the Internet Censorship Filter. I thought the Four Corners one was actually quite interesting. I thought Q&A was actually lightweight because the problem with Q&A was that the questions were being asked, which I like, but the panel was completely the wrong panel.
Right.
And I think if you're going to have the person who runs GetUp on that panel, you want to have Stephen Conroy on the other side of the table. Agreed. And Stephen Conroy was not being represented, you know? And so I sit there and go, you're going to have the people who are actually making those decisions and making those stupid statements, put them on there and get them to have questions answered. Yeah. Having a bunch of people talk about it doesn't help. Because there's no authority there, you know? Yeah. The GetUp guy, I felt, was kind of neutered because he had some stuff to say, but he didn't have anybody to fight against, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was my opinion. I did like the Four Corners one that was on before. You can get them both on iView, I think. So if you go to iView, you can download and have a look at them. Stephen Conroy was actually on Q&A about a year ago. Answering questions, and he was just completely...
I saw that. He got smashed.
He got smashed because they had a representative for the Office of Film and Literature classification board there, and he kept saying, oh, and of course we would start rating everything through them, and the guy was the look on his face was like, are you kidding? It's like, you're joking, you know? There's no way we can actually do that.
Yeah, internet.
Yeah, the internet, dude.
Look at every site that comes
billions of sites. Can I just point out that the one argument that Stephen Conroy keeps bringing up is that there are 335 child pornography sites on the open web. Out of how many billions of websites?
Yeah, wow, man.
Boy, that's needle in the haystack stuff. And yes, okay, if you want to have a filter that just blocks a direct IP address, it blocks a direct address and says that's blocked because of that is illegal content, fine. That's only 335 sites. Your blacklist and what you're saying is it's going to actually contain somewhere in the realm of 2,500 sites. What are the other sites?
Yeah, and they don't want to talk about that.
And they don't talk about that. And then the point that Josh and I were talking about just the other day, which I was just brilliant. We started talking, I think we were talking about the tech show actually, when we said he doesn't want to make the ACMA blacklist public because then it's like a shopping list and people could then go to the sites. But aren't they blocked?
Yeah.
You know, the point is that what's wrong with blocking them? What's wrong with listing the list if those sites are blocked?
Well, it's because it has no credibility, isn't it?
And the filter has already been proven to be hackable. So
yeah, I mean,
hacking on filters is such a relative
term. It's
called
anonymous proxy filters.
Dude, it's not even that. Some of the sites, literally, on some of these filters can be circumvented just by going through a search engine.
Yeah.
So if you don't type in the direct
address... Or if you know the direct IP number... Yeah. Of the site, you can just log in using an IP and just avoid the DNS server altogether. Yeah. You know, it's just the filter is such a stupid idea.
Just if you don't mind, I just wanted to quickly go back to the point you brought up earlier, the interactive entertainment thing of 2009.
Yep.
Which I think discovered also that the average age of a gamer was 32. But one of the things I found...
Yeah, the reports are all over the place. It's between 28 and 36 I've seen reports on. So, yeah.
But one of the things I found most interesting was they asked, not only do you think Australia should have an R18 rating, which was in the high 90s, but are you aware that Australia doesn't have an R18 plus rating for games? And I think it was 89% of people weren't aware. Hmm. So they're trying to bring up this argument about it's come from focus groups, but that... survey showed that 89% of its people weren't even aware that there was no rating, and that includes probably gamers
Let's take this into the other censorship arena, which is obviously pornography. What a lot of Australians don't realize, because you can walk down to your corner adult store and buy them and nobody ever enforces it, but what people are not aware is that all X-rated material is banned for sale or rental in all states of Australia and has been since 1983 or something like that. You can buy them via mail order from Canberra, funnily enough, because the territories aren't included. But in all states of Australia, this material is not illegal to own it. It's not illegal to watch it. It's illegal to buy or rent it. Okay. Yep. Now, according to surveys that are done almost on a yearly basis, 74 to 75% of the Australian population thinks that these should be reinstated. All right. They think it should, but they don't understand why pornography is banned in the first place. As long as it is sold in closed environments where, you know, kids can't see it and so on. Yep. You know, who cares? No government wants to be seen as the government that brought pornography back. And it's the same thing, I think, is what's happening with the game rating. I don't think the government wants to be seen as the government who brought in adult entertainment, adult ratings for games. I think it's this weird Puritan society we live in. They don't want to be seen as that government.
That's terrible, because they've been obviously listening too much to Atkinson and his stupid arguments.
Oh, like, Atkinson and all those who, all of his all those who were before him.
All of them. And I mean, I took, because I actually wrote essays on this at university, so they had to be, you know, balanced. So I had to go into Atkinson's argument with an open mind, and it didn't take long to go, but that's flawed. Like, you're saying that you're doing this to protect kids, but you're also saying that the rating system in place at the moment is there to protect kids, but you're also saying that you don't believe that it is protecting kids. You're an idiot.
Like, yeah, no, he is. He's everything came out of Atkinson's mouth was a contradiction.
And he just used like examples like Rayplay, which was never sold.
But it was always the same game. He always brought up Rayplay.
He brought that up, but it was never sold in Australia. It was never even submitted for review in Australia. It was just one of those, well,
one of those weird Japanese.
It wouldn't have
things.
Made an R rating at all, even if we had one.
Just bringing in an R rating doesn't mean we're going to get all this horrible material. It means that it goes through the censorship board
and
gets rated, or it gets rejected according to the grounds of an R rating rather than just an MA. Exactly. A lot of the stuff that is banned, I use air quotes on banned, because it's not actually banned. Let's be very clear. When they ban a game or they ban a movie, it just means it's been refused classification. Yep. If we had the R rating in place, the game would probably be on the shelves. But it is refused classifications based on the criteria that an MA leads up to. Because it exceeds that, it gets refused classification. Yep. It's not banned. It's not. They're not saying you are forbidden from having it.
Yes,
stuff has been banned. Salo, which is now finally getting re-released. But Salo has been banned for 20 years.
Yes.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre was banned for 7 years in Australia. These are banned. These are where the government has said, no, it does not fit within our criteria, we are not letting that come into the country. Baisemois, Ken Park, these are banned on different reasons. All right, there's a difference between banned and refused classification. Refused classification just means that it didn't qualify within our guidelines. If we had a broader guideline, it would probably get in. All right, that's really what it comes down to. Now, the other thing about the whole adult film thing is, I was watching something on TV the other day, it made me laugh. We actually are so hung up in this country about sex and violence and everything else that not only are X-rated films banned, but if you do manage to get X-rated films classified in this country for sale in the territories, there are such strong guidelines. They're not allowed to have violent content in any adult rated film. Now, this is not sexual violence, which is what it was meant to be. Yes. Mind you, when Mary Whitehouse came out here in the 80s and had that huge thing about sexual violence, it was about rape and stuff like that. The Australian government knee-jerked react the whole thing, banned it all, and just kind of flipped the wig, and basically said all violence in sexual films, this should never meet. So you know the film Pirates? Pirates has actually been released in Australia. Now, Pirates, for those who don't know, is an X-rated film done Pirates of the Caribbean style, right? And it's actually got, you know, CGI
quite high
effects.
Budget, isn't it?
Yeah, they I think it was like $30 million it cost to make. They actually do
most
sort
of expensive porn film of all time.
Absolutely, which was originally held by Caligula, but now has been moved on to this. But basically, you know, sword fighting skeletons and all sorts of stuff. Well, Australia, Pirates as it exists in America, does not exist in Australia, because, or it does illegally, but because there's not allowed to be any violence in a porn film, they had to release it as a two-disc movie.
What?
One disc is all the sex scenes, and the other disc has the action scenes.
That's probably not so bad.
The funny thing is, none of the violent scenes, none of the sword fighting or anything has anything to do with the sex.
They're not actually
related to it. And so they can just literally pull the components apart and they release it as a two-disc set with the two things. And you're sitting there, oh, I'm sorry, this is
terrible. Yay for circumventing the law.
Whoa, yay! This is just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. This is loopy, okay? It is. The Australian government is loopy. All right, we got to move on because time is just flying by here. I think there's one more tech story. It doesn't really need to be going to Zynga Games. If you play Farmville and stuff like that, just to let you know that they're fighting with Facebook as well. And it looks like they're going to be moving their servers into their own social network and taking all their stuff with them, because Facebook has apparently gone crazy and wants to charge huge amounts of money for their own currency.
Oh, wow.
So Facebook is turning into its own country. So they're going to have Facebook credits. But to use a Facebook credit, they take a 30% fee.
Oh, wow. No.
On the exchange rate. And so Zynga basically said, Fail. And so they're talking about moving the whole thing off, and they're at war with Facebook at the moment. And considering that they make billions of dollars a year in their gaming, I think Facebook's pissing off the wrong people, quite frankly.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to film and television. We're going to kick through some of this pretty fast. First of all, Jane Goldman.
Octane's coined the word Zuckerland.
And just to be a little bit more literally minded, the domain that has been floated around is Zynga Live. So they're actually talking about ZyngaLive.com. All right, this is Jane Goldman.
Oh.
Wow, she's...
busty.
Yeah.
Jane Goldman is the writer of Kick-Ass. She's the screenwriter of Kick-Ass. She's also a novelist. She's written, she's produced television. She used to be a presenter on British television. She also wrote the screenplay to Stardust. And I think in the article I wrote about her on geekactually.com, I think she's the only screenwriter I can say also boasts the fact that she was a bra model. So she was a lingerie
that
model.
Makes sense.
I can see that.
She's a very busty woman, and I listened to an interview with her on Creative Screenwriting Podcast, and she's also really funny. All right, so she's good humored. She's a very good writer, and she has been hired by Matthew Vaughn. Matthew Vaughn has been hired to direct the new X-Men film, X-Men First Class, and he's brought his writer on to basically rewrite the script. So things are looking up a little bit for the X-Men First Class film. Matthew Vaughn, as we know, is a very talented filmmaker. She's a very good writer. We might have a film that is working. Now, I'd just like to remind people, because a lot of people forget, Matthew Vaughn was supposed to direct X-Men 3. He was the original director hired, and then he couldn't do it, and Ratner took over. So all I can think is, boy, it would have been a very different X-Men 3 had Vaughn been involved.
Yes. What X-Men 3? I don't know.
What X-Men 3?
I'm sorry. I don't remember that film.
All right.
There was a 1, there was a 2, then there was... That was it? That was it? That's
Agreed.
All I remember.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know.
X-Men 3 has some moments in it.
No, what film?
I think it does.
It definitely has moments in it.
Which makes it worse.
Because you want the rest of it.
I had a film that has like this moment where you're like, this is crap, and then, oh my God, that was really good. What the hell is a really good scene doing in a really bad film?
Yeah.
That's why I just wipe that out of my mind, because then I don't get depressed every time I think about the good scenes. It's just a clear image.
He takes it so personally.
I do the same things. I wish Ben was here right now.
He'd back me up. Because you take things so personally, I'm going to show you the Inception trailer.
Oh, yeah.
This is the new trailer for Inception. It came out this week. After the plot description, we actually read the plot description on the show last week. The trailer came out literally the next day. So I wish they had released the trailer last week. We could have put it on. Anyway, so this is Christopher Nolan's new film, Inception. Gives you a little bit more of the plot in this trailer.
There's one thing you should know about me. I specialize in a very specific type of security. Subconscious security.
You're talking about dreams.
Mr. Cobb has a job offer he would like to discuss with you.
Some kind of work placement?
Not exactly.
We create the world of the dream. We bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their secrets.
Then you break in and steal it?
Well, it's not strictly speaking legal.
It's called Inception.
I'm ready.
I think I found a way home. And this last job, that's how I get there.
Dreams feel real while we're in them. It's only when we wake up that we realize something is actually strange.
This is your responsibility. You are not prepared for this.
Dreams collapsing.
I have it under control.
I need to see out of control.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
All right. Oh my god.
That film looks incredible.
Look, it's one of those films where I sit there and go, he's giving us enough to completely make us fascinated by the concept. He hasn't given too much away, as the Robin Hood trailer will later. but, you know, I think, no, look, Christopher Nolan is a master marketer.
Yes, he's
and
brilliant.
This film has had everybody curious for some time. So I'm very curious to see what he
does. He hasn't made a dud. On top of that, if you probably already talked about this on the show before, but the fact that even the cast, I think Leonardo DiCaprio was coming out and saying, we didn't really know what was going on. And that, to me, wasn't this idea that it was a bunch of weird, left-field, creepy, random stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were apparently only given segments of the script, learn it, this is how I want you to do it, go act, shoot it. So that there was this idea of there was no way for information to be leaked online because nobody freaking knew beyond the people who were doing it. So I think that's really genius.
More than that, like, I mean, I think the genius also really comes out in the fact that the actors themselves are then kind of also dealing with the new situations on the fly. Like when you sort of walk into a scene in the next scene, it really is like that concept of being in a bizarre kind of dream state today you're going to be falling down a corridor sideways and you're just kind of like, wow, this is not going to be hard to be surprised about this.
This kind of relates in a little bit to another trailer we're going to show in just a second, which is the teaser trailer to J.J. Abrams' new film. Now, I know Josh wasn't impressed by this at all, but we'll come back to why. But it's the same principle, though, which is the whole... And J.J. Abrams was actually really clear about Cloverfield. When Cloverfield first... And he didn't direct Cloverfield, but he produced it.
Yeah.
And when he started the marketing campaign on that with that one teaser trailer, which had the party going on and suddenly the Statue of Liberty's head landed, didn't even give you a title of the film, he said when he was a kid, he had this wonderful feeling when he'd go to see a movie and he'd see a trailer and get really excited about the film and he knew nothing about it, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like that whole voyage of discovery to find out, going in to see the film and going, wow, what's this whole experience about? And he said, we don't have that anymore. We just don't have that anymore. Yes, Josh?
I totally disagree, because the two differences between those two trailers, right, is Inception is intelligent and showing me something. It is giving me an idea and a concept. It's going, this is the idea. This is the basic story behind it. He may have shot that one trailer that was a teaser, mm-hmm. right? But it's not his marketing campaign. He is still giving us knowledge. He's giving us a plot overview of the film. He's not just going, look at this interesting idea. That's it. We're done.
No, I disagree with you, because the second trailer for Cloverfield did give more of an indication.
It gave
of what
you
the,
more,
what,
but
what
it was
film
still
was
the
about,
same kind of
still keeping things like the monster under, because he didn't want people to know that it was going to be a big monster. There was debate all the way up until the last minute as to what was actually happening to New York.
I'm with Beardy on this one, because if you think about the original Inception trailers, even there was the much the same reaction to the Super 8 thing, which is, what the hell is going on? I mean, it's...
And Super 8 will give us more information. Super 8's a year away. Yeah, yeah. So he's basically saying, here's this little teaser for you. This is what we're not going to tell you what's
I've told
about
you
at
before
point,
that but. I'm not actually against J.J. Abrams, right? I just don't like his marketing strategy. Look, if he gives a decent trailer, like that sort of level of information, I'll be happy. But even that second trailer to Cloverfield, I still felt the same way. I was like, what the... fuck is this?
No, I see. I disagree. I think that what the fuck is this is that can actually be a positive reaction.
It was positive right up until I saw the film.
The job of a trailer, though, is to...
All right, but being disappointed with the film... If you'd loved Cloverfield, you would have loved the campaign. I liked Cloverfield. I didn't love it. I liked it. I thought it was actually very clever. And I thought the effects were well done, and I thought it built tension, and I actually had no problems with Cloverfield. But... if you had actually liked Cloverfield, you probably would have looked back on the campaign with a fondness to that campaign, thinking what a build-up to that film. I actually look at the Cloverfield campaign and think it's a very clever campaign for the film that it actually ended up being.
Oh, it worked. And I bought into the whole talking to people about what the hell's going on.
And the viral campaign.
I've read this little rumor, set report about it's a big monster. Oh, is it a big monster? What if it's this? Is it an alien? Is it Godzilla? You know, I mean, there was this everything going around, and it made it more exciting.
Yeah.
I actually went into the movie thinking it's going to be a piece of shit, because I had read a lot of reviews about people saying it's crap, it's average, it's Blair, which means Godzilla, and that's it. And I went and going, okay, this is going to be bad, but found it to be really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I saw it at the cinema. I own a copy downstairs. I didn't mind it. I thought it was actually an okay film.
Yeah.
I think it's flawed, I don't think it's perfect.
No, it's not perfect.
But I think it's entertaining. And I didn't get, because see, the thing is, I don't get the motion sickness. And people are saying, I don't like the motion. Exactly. You know, I was fine with that, you know, for the style they're going. It did it much better than Blair Witch did, you know, on a fraction of the budget, granted. But Blair Witch, I thought, was a total dud, you know, and yet it made so much money. But it's the same basic concept. It's Blair Witch for the big budget crowd. That's all it is. Anyway, Josh is looking
to each his own.
Anyway, this new campaign for J.J. Abrams' new film is curious because they haven't given us a plot on it. But what he has said is that it's being produced by Steven Spielberg, directed and written by J.J. Abrams. And basically, it is a throwback, a piece of nostalgia to Spielberg's 70s and 80s movies, a la E.T., Close Encounters, that style. Yeah. And so basically, and when you look at this trailer, you see there, you can actually identify shots from Close Encounters in the trailer.
I'll agree with that.
That is what he's going for. He's actually making an homage to 70s and 80s Spielberg films. And I think that's a really intriguing concept because it's my favorite period of Spielberg's career. So let's have a look at it. It's really short, and it's kind of dark. So I do apologize to the chat room. There is a link to it on our website. Go to the website, and there's also a link to the high-res version, which you can get at Apple. So this is Super 8, though. It's very short. I'll leave the mics open for this one. I think you're right. I like the way it's shot.
Yeah. I like the way it's shot. That's as far.
And I want to know. I mean, J.J. Abrams has got the best digital.
Creates questions.
Best digital artist in the business. I mean, that door cracking apart just looks phenomenal. And you know, it's all CG. So.
Oh, dude, no. Yeah. But to me, it's actually I'm meaning more the old 70s 80s style. Yeah.
I love
way
the
of
fact
shooting
that yellow pickup truck that was just Close Encounters. You know, it's just it begs lots of questions. I like the look of it. It's a year away. Hopefully, we get some more information as it comes to light. But I'm jazzing it. I'm thinking that this could be kind of interesting.
I'll be there.
We'll go see.
Either way, I'm going to go see it. There will be no bias towards
and
it.
And quite frankly,
on that.
After Star Trek, he could direct anything, and I will go see it. So
Look, Star Trek.
He's got
good.
A lot of credit in the bank at the moment. So. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like I'm not basing my hate on it based on the fact I just really hate his advertising campaigns. That's it. I'm not going to base my experience of the movie on the fact that I hate the trailer.
You're an Abramsist, man.
All right, we're gonna bolt through some of this really, really quickly. First of all, I'm going to say that. This was just an odd little piece of news. The Pixar blog reported that their film that Pixar's been working on for the last year called Newt, N-E-W-T, has been canceled. Now, the reason why I thought this was fascinating was, in fact, I don't think I've ever heard Pixar cancel a film before.
Well, wouldn't it be too bloody expensive to cancel a film?
Pretty much, unless they haven't actually started rendering yet.
Right, yeah,
but in concept, it has been dropped off of Disney Slate, and it is canceled. So I just thought that was very intriguing. No details, really, as to why. I just thought it was... An intriguing little piece of news.
Different.
Tim Burton.
Oh, yes.
This is Josh's favorite man. Tim Burton
Just look at him. He's like an aged, withering
alien.
Bono.
And he has the same abbreviation as
Bono. Yes. All right, now, the reason why he's making the news this time is not all the other films that he's announced. We've got another one. I don't know when he's going to actually find the time to make all these films that he keeps coming up with.
I don't care.
But apparently...
Keeps coming up with...
DreamWorks has acquired... DreamWorks is Spielberg and Katzenberg and so forth. DreamWorks has acquired the rights to a new game, or an older game, actually. A game called Monster Apocalypse. And this is a shot of the game here. It's a little miniatures-based game. And I've actually got a detail shot here, too. There you go. Okay, so this is Monster Apocalypse.
Yeah.
They acquired the rights to this game, and they're courting Burton to come and make a film out of it because, quite frankly, they have no idea what to do with it.
Dude, no, you know
all
what
I can think is, why would you buy it if you had no idea what to do with it?
All I can think about when I think about things like this is an episode of Family Guy from ages ago where they're taking the piss out of Stephen King. And basically, they need a new book out of him. And basically, he's just sitting there in the desk, and he's like, my next film will be about a lamp. And he just picks up the lamp. And this is all I can think about. They're just sitting there, and they're like, right, our new movie idea, we've got one. We made it up yesterday. It's, and they just kind of look around the room for the nearest thing. Monster Apocalypse.
Yeah, you can just imagine some exec was probably at his house, and his kid was playing Monster Apocalypse. He went, oh. I'm filming that.
What is that? I don't understand it, but I need it. Tim Burton.
All right, now, I know you're on T7, but give me the basic rundown of what this game's about.
Pitch it to me.
I love the fact that Slash Filmcast, which also wrote this up this week, they went through their whole article basically saying they didn't know what it was all about and everything, but at the very bottom they said, but I'm sure Spirals will be involved.
And of course, Danny Elfman.
And
Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp in the lead role.
Well, Helena Bonham Carter is a given. Unless they get divorced, and then it'll be whoever his new wife is.
Oh my god, dude, you know what? That might be the most exciting period. That will be the next time I will watch a Tim Burton film.
Which is?
Will be when they break up. Because it'll be like, you know, open purse, remove balls. It'll be like he might finally get himself back.
But, you know, when he was married to Lisa Marie, he did nothing but put Lisa Marie in his films. She was in Ed Wood. She was in Mars Attacks, you know.
Yeah, but I like those films.
The last Tim Burton film that I adored was Big Fish. Everything after that has been all right.
I actually forgot about Big Fish. I didn't mind that. My favorite Tim Burton of all films, I think, is probably Ed Wood, which I think is brilliant. And I think I love Beetlejuice too, but Ed Wood is just a masterpiece. But the last good film I think he made is Sleepy Hollow.
So that was before Big Fish, though, wasn't it?
That was before Big Fish. Yeah.
So I thought Big Fish was amazing, and everything after that was all right, but.
I love Sleepy Hollow. I love the visuals of Sleepy Hollow. That was the last time he was interesting.
It was fantastic, wasn't it?
It was the last time he was interesting. All right, speaking of visuals, go to geekactually.com at some point when you have a chance and have a look at the short film that is actually posted up there called Pixels. Now, we're not just going to play it on the show because it is just... Oh, hello, light's changing. It is just music to images and sound effects to images. So there's no point in us playing it on the show here. But it is embedded at geekactually.com. The reason why we've embedded it is because, A, we've got a slight fascination with fan films at the moment. I don't know if you've noticed. But B, the reason why this one went up in particular is it's genius. It's only about a minute and a half long. And it's been optioned for a feature film.
What more interests me is who it's been optioned by.
Yeah, exactly. Now, apparently, it has been optioned by Happy Madison and Sony Pictures. So they're obviously gearing it up to be a vehicle for Adam Sandler.
And his crew,
so Rob Schneider and everybody else. Yep. And Sony Pictures, who's producing it, has basically said they want to have a Ghostbusters-type film out of it. And if you watch the short, all I could think was, I don't see a feature film in here. I see a really clever short. I don't see a feature film.
But that sounds like an Adam Sandler film, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, there you go. So go and have a look at that. The short itself is brilliant. Josh and I watched it the other day. It's just brilliant. It's so clever. And second to last, we'll do this very quickly. We'll just run through these. Rambo, last week we said that Stallone had said 99% sure Rambo is dead, never coming back. And then at Cannes this year, in the market section, Millennium Films had banners up for Rambo 5 coming out in 2011.
And there was a guy pitching it as well.
Sorry?
A guy was pitching a premise. I can't remember how he's involved, but he was...
Well, no, he already had a premise, so they're obviously still running with the same premise. Because he talked about Rambo 5 about a year ago.
He did.
Yeah, about being South America.
Well, that was the Big Hunt one. That got dropped.
Oh, no, sorry. This is the one about... It was supposed to be the girl on U.S. territory, and he was supposed to be looking for a missing girl or something like that. And basically, we don't know whether or not this is just Millennium having wish fulfillment fantasies, and they're trying to see if they can
maybe,
make this happen.
Maybe they're planning to reinvent the series, and what they're going to do is put Shia LaBeouf in there.
Well, funny you should mention Shia LaBeouf, because I also have a Shia LaBeouf story. Sorry, I'm going to kill that one. I'm going to kill that one on you right now.
Wow, seriously, we're not even going to laugh about that. Thanks for that.
Killing Rambo, man.
Fuck you guys.
Well, Shia LaBeouf has been cast and everything. Shia LaBeouf came out in an article. Sorry, not in an article. He came about in an interview in Cannes, because he's over there at the moment, basically saying that Transformers movie, second Transformers movie, got too big for its own good. And he says, and the third one is going to bring the heart back to the franchise. This is from an article, by the way, from the Huffington Post.
He hasn't seen the script yet, has he?
Apparently they're actually in production. He said, when I, quote Shia LaBeouf, when I saw the second movie, I wasn't impressed with what we did. Okay.
He should have said what he did. Separated himself from as much as
that.
Possible.
He says, there were some really wild stunts in it, but the heart was gone. And I completely agree with him. Agree with him.
Yeah.
He says that we got lost. We tried to get bigger. It's what happens to sequels. It's like, how do you top the first one? And we got too big. Mm. And because it got too big and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. He says, quote unquote, Transformers 3 is going to, where he says, it's going to be more about the relationships. And he says, unless you have relationships, he says, then the movie doesn't matter. It's just a bunch of robots fighting each other. He says, Transformers 3, it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of death, human death. This time they're targeting humans. It's going to be the craziest action movie ever made, or we failed. Quote, unquote.
It's like, I have to say, though, his actual comments fill me with a little, you know.
Look, at least he identifies it. The question is, did Michael Bay see the same thing?
Well, dude, you know what? Like, it's really interesting. I was having this weird internal thought a couple of days ago, and I figured out, I think, how Michael Bay makes action films. He has a secret room in his house that's just big, you know, sort of hill valley kind of a situation with just thousands of little figurines. And he actually plays with Transformers, and he actually does this all. And I just have this image of him going like this in a room, and that's actually how he makes his scripts. I've figured it out.
Well, you know what the main problem with the second film was the writer's strike, because Michael Bay wrote most of the screenplay. Because what
and
you had
that stupid ringer writer that he brought in as well.
Exactly.
Oh,
so what
dude,
you had
what else
was
did that guy do?
We read something on him as well, and he it was not pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Was, so you had Michael Bay writing a script, doing the directing and all this stuff, when clearly I think the first film was a success because the script had heart. I went into the first film expecting it to be a bunch of robots kicking the shit out of each other and that'll be fine. And what I had was a really kind of warm action film. I'm like, wow, I actually really enjoyed that and I was entertained and I got into some of the little drama elements. Wow, that how did Michael Bay do that?
I thought the first Transformers was actually very funny.
It was hilarious.
Really good humor.
So it had,
well,
yeah,
because
it had
Shia LaBeouf playing to his strengths. At the time,
it also felt like Spielberg had a much stronger hand on,
exactly,
on the proceedings that were going
well,
on.
Well, and like I was saying, the whole Megan Fox thing. Megan Fox was a new thing, and she was
she was
pretty on screen. Yeah. She had no background to her. It was like seeing a girl at a party. It was like, you see her, she's hot. We have no background, no information. We don't care whether or not she has any depth to her. Now we know, and the second that actually happens, the image is gone, and she is a totally different image to you. And that's what happened. And number two, we didn't like her because she's a stuck-up bitch.
Plus,
and we knew that.
2.5 hours long for an action film? I don't know why Michael Bay does that. Like, the story was crap.
We can even accept that, though, because, I mean, Dark Knight was 2.5 hours
long. But that was a brilliant film. Multi-layered drama, blockbuster, brilliance. And you've got Michael Bay with a story about, what was it, finding a magical dagger that can bring shit back to life. No. For 2.5 hours.
And throw in some racist robots.
Exactly,
and,
racist robots.
And Transformer testicles.
And this really, really old Transformer that is just somewhat... Oh,
whoa, man, you had to go there for a minute. I whited for a minute. My eyes are like, fucking balls.
Transformer testicles,
they've
man.
Come back. I remember the balls now.
Yes.
Where are
you?
I'm beneath the balls.
Yeah.
It's, yes, no, not pretty.
I don't think Spielberg had anything to do with that part.
I think
somehow.
Spielberg went, the first one was successful, you obviously know what you're doing, I'm going to go make a film.
Or he read the script and he was like, I'm going to leave this one to you, Michael. I'm out.
I love the fact that everybody...
So my name's just on the production.
Yeah, I'll
right,
take the
right,
check,
cool,
but I'm out.
I love the fact that everybody denied having any involvement in the racism elements of it. When the Mudflaps and Skids characters came up, Michael Bay said, no, that was in the script. The writers turned around and said, no, it was not in the script. He put it in. And then suddenly he'll say, no, it was them, or it was them. And no, the comedians came up with it on their own. It's like, somebody take responsibility.
It's the director's fault, really. I mean, yeah,
it always comes down to him. At the end of the day, man, he would have seen
At the end of the day, whoever wrote that shit, the director put it in there.
That's right.
Okay? So you can say whatever you want.
Now, this brings us up to the unmarked story in the show notes, because we forgot to put it in. But basically, there has been all this talk this week about those two characters, because with Transformers 3, the question was, would Mudflaps and Skids be in it again? Because they were so ridiculed and basically...
And racist.
And hated. they are the Jar Jar Binks of the Transformers world, right? And Michael Bay said point blank in an interview, no, they wouldn't be back. Mm. Period. They're not coming back, right? Mm. Great. Everybody went, fantastic, they're not coming back. Then the two cars that they transform into were spotted on the set. And there was actually photographs posted of the two cars that would become Mudflaps and Skids. So
maybe, again, it's going to be one of those shitty Hollywood jokes where it'll be like, well, what's up with them? It's like, no, they're in a timeout.
Well, the report came out, I think it was yesterday, that said that they actually saw some filming happening and the cars were driving around the set. So,
there you go.
Point blank. I think he's basically said, no, they're not in it.
Ain't it cool was having a look at that and they were saying, did he lie or was he kind of doing this Obi-Wan Kenobi, what I told you was true from a certain point of view?
You know?
Like, they're there, but now they're kind of maybe clean cut, they've got jobs and they're not racist. So they're not back, but they're back. You know? Yeah. They've got out of the hood.
They got record deals.
So they're even more blinged out. How do I make these bots less racist? Give them a record deal.
All right. Look, we're running real long, so we're going to drop that last story. Basically, the producers of Hurt Locker are trying to sue everybody on the planet.
Sue the world.
I'm so looking forward.
My answer to it is, we might bring it up in the after show, but my answer to it is, yeah, good luck with that. Yeah. All right. So let's see what they do with that. All right. Let's move into this feature review. We'll start off as we always do with our little bit of detail on this. Robin Hood, directed by Ridley Scott. Film was written by Brian Hegeland. Now, Hegeland is a really interesting character, and we'll come back to him in a minute. But written by Brian Hegeland. The film stars Russell Crowe, Kate Blanchett, William Hurt, Mark Strong, Max von Sydow, Oscar Isaac, Danny Houston, Mark Addy, Kevin Duran, Scott Grimes, Alan Doyle, and Matthew McFadden. I actually listed all those people because that's actually his little crew. The Will Scarlet and so forth with him. I thought they deserved to be mentioned as well.
Damn right. We'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that. All right. So now here's a synopsis for you. Are we sitting in comfy? The story follows commoner Robin Longstride and his fellow archers Little John, Alan the Dale, and Will Scarlet as they return from the Crusades, pretend to be nobles, and get involved in an invasion of England from the French. Along the way, Robin finds out about his past and falls for Lady Marian, the wife of the noble he was impersonating. Now, if this doesn't sound like the tale of Robin Hood, you would be right. In an attempt to be different, Ridley Scott and Brian Hegeland have basically concocted a prequel to the Robin Hood tale. If you are looking for the robs from the rich, gives to the poor, swashbuckling romantic Robin Hood, to quote Obi-Wan Kenobi, this is not the film you're looking for. Right? Because it is not. And here is the trailer.
I think I have much to tell you about history, about your history. Your father was a visionary.
What did he see?
That kings have a need of their subjects. A dangerous idea.
Rise and rise again, until lambs become lions. My father died for this.
What does it mean?
It means never give up.
A king does not bargain for the loyalty that every subject owes him.
In the name of King John, pay! Or burn.
Many wrongs to be righted in the country of King John. And I pray for a miracle.
That's something that we need to do.
We're common archers, Rob.
The laws of this land enslave people to its king. A king who offers nothing in return.
Robin Longstride, also known as Robin of the Hood.
For the crimes of incitement to cause unrest, I declare him to be an outlaw!
All who shelter him, their lives shall be taken on sight. Nail, please.
It's
seems we are to share my chamber. I sleep with a dagger. If you so much as move to touch me, I will sever your manhood.
Thanks for the warning.
Robin, your father was a great man. You are your father's son.
As many men as you need.
Are you ready to be who you are?
Yes.
What we ask for is liberty. Liberty by law.
And rise again until lambs become lions.
Okie dokie. Now, I'm going to make this very clear straight off the bat that I was not impressed by this.
What?
Film. All right. Quite frankly, I thought that. Look, I said this to Josh when we actually saw the film. Go back a few years ago, you couldn't have kept me away from a Ridley Scott film. Wild Horses couldn't have kept me away from a Ridley Scott film. Mm. Now, I kind of have to drag myself to Ridley Scott films, and it's unfortunate because I think he was probably one of the most gifted filmmakers working. Mm. This is the man who brought us Alien. This is the man who brought us Blade Runner. This is the man who brought us Gladiator. Probably his last really, really super hot film was Gladiator. This is the man who brought us Matchstick Men, one of the great Nicolas Cage films.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Yeah. Sam Rockwell.
He's a terrific visionary director.
Well, just look at some of the things that he puts in place, like the concept of never doing a sequel, the concept of never redoing something he's already done. He likes to do original things.
Except now he seems to be repeating himself, and this is this is the problem. Now, I will say straight off the bat, we made a lot of jokes going to this film that it was Gladiator 2, and I am glad to report that it's not.
God, I wish it was.
I'm glad to report that. No, I'm just
even some semblance of
even
awesome.
The visual sense of it, because the trailer all looked very kind of that blue washed out filter, that very very Ridley Scott look that he's been doing the last few films. Kingdom of Heaven had that same look as well.
Yes.
This one actually has more color. It's not that old washed out look. It doesn't actually feel like a Gladiator film. It doesn't
look, the realism aspect and the fact that he's brought out the full color and made it very obvious is actually one of the things that I really hated about the film. It's like, no, it takes out everything that is Robin Hood. I mean, like, if we're going, before we even start talking about the actual film itself, I am okay with the concept of reinventing things. I don't mind kind of, like, in some aspects I think it doesn't work, and we'll get to that later, but I don't mind necessarily the concept of fleshing it out, making characters darker. Mm. I'm not necessarily against that concept, but you have to still pay homage to where it comes from, and that's one of my biggest problems with this film, is I sat there and I went, okay, Robin Hood, as the original trailer, we're going right back to, what was it, 1938?
1938 was the Errol Flynn one.
Yes, exactly. And you go back, and one of the first screens that comes up, even in the trailer, is one of the greatest romances of all time. It was about love and romance, and it was swashbuckling.
Let's
and
refresh
fun.
People's memory.
Yep.
Even
in shots like this, you've got great sort of like fun and sort of life, and everything's very, very, you know, sort of. Well, fun.
I'm glad they
fun is
the
biggest word. Yeah, dude, I'm okay with the costume change.
I'm glad they changed the costume. So this is Errol Flynn, and this is the original Robin Hood. And yes, it's all very technicolor, and it's all very bright greens and what have you. And I'm glad we got away from all that, and we've got to a slightly more modern age and everything else. The problem that I had with it was the story of Robin Hood is pretty much set in stone. I mean, it is a very famous, very romantic, very swashbuckling tale of a nobleman who basically had to fall to crime to help protect the people, right?
Well, and the way that they pitched the trailers as well initially was the untold story of Robin Hood, like they'd discovered some friggin' secret manuscript coming out.
It was like when Bruckheimer produced King Arthur and basically said, this is the true story of King Arthur.
Yes,
it's like, it's not, because we don't know if there ever existed a King Arthur.
So they
Arthur,
found another
you know?
Story.
But they found a different way of telling it, whether it worked or not. That's a whole different issue. But the point is, you know, this is a legend. Robin Hood is a legend, right? It is based on a fact. It is based on the fact that there was a nobleman who did this, but we don't know who Robin Hood really was. Nobody actually knows. We have lots of theories on who he was. The whole Robin of Locksley and everything, those series and all this keeps coming back up again and again and again, but these are theories. The legend of Robin Hood is a legend, and what makes that legend work is the fact that we know the story so well. Right,
yeah.
It's the same thing with King Arthur. When people start screwing around with the King Arthurian legend and start doing things like Mist of Avalon, yeah, maybe entertaining, but it's not King Arthur anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, agreed. King Arthur is Merlin and Morgana and Excalibur and the Sword and the Stone and
Lady
you know,
the Lake.
You know, the Lady of the Lake. You know, there are certain elements that need to be played into it to make that legend work.
Yep.
You know, and when you start messing with these legends to the point where this is not recognizable as Robin Hood.
Yeah, I think you can break it down into the three main characters, three main categories when you're talking about the film. You could there's the swashbuckling, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's the fun and there's the romance. What are the three things that are missing from this film? Yeah. He has missed the point so badly it's painful. Number one, there's no romantic aspect to this thing. I'm sorry.
They try in one scene where she finally they declare their love, but you sit there and go, too little,
dude,
too late. And
the not only that, I mean, in the actual, like right over the film itself, nothing is pretty, nothing is interesting. There is nothing to fall in love with here. Cate Blanchett looks like a man. Russell Crowe is like just an angry, angry bully. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, but that's true. Okay, and there is no fun. There is a few great comments. My favorite characters in this film were actually the Merry Men.
Because they were merry.
They were the
best characters in this were Will Scarlet, Alan the Dale,
they were focused
and
on the least.
They were absolutely the three best characters in
it. And there was no swashbuckling. There was blood and violence. Like, there were brutal scenes and nothing in between. Hmm. Like, there was no kind of like, ha 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 ha. There was just stab, cut, you know. Like,
shoot some arrows.
Yeah.
You
know. And it's just, this is all the stuff that just made this film fall apart for me, because I went in just wanting a little bit.
If anything, this film wasn't Gladiator. If anything, this film ended up trying to be Braveheart.
No, I would say if you look at the last scenes, it was Saving Private Ryan.
And Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
The staging of the Beach of Normandy. Yeah, absolutely.
It was the reverse, though.
Same shots and everything.
Yeah,
it was just like people falling in water with arrows flying
through. Made of wood instead of metal, and you're like, did they even have those? Like, I mean, they may have, but that's just World War II shit.
Right, and my favorite scene of the entire movie, where Maid Marian, for no apparent reason, shows up on the beach with a bunch of kids with arrows. I'm like,
who were riding
when
ponies?
Was this okay?
Yeah. Which was like, you've got this really big, massive action set piece about to happen, a huge battle. You know, the combination of all of these
kids
things.
On donkeys.
And then kids on ponies rock up with a woman leading them who, you know, fine. They didn't set her up as a warrior, though. You know,
yeah,
she grabbed a sword.
She wasn't Maid Marian warrior.
And she opened a
friggin'
door with it and then tried to enter the battle against the French and just stood by and watched Robin fighting everyone. So she wasn't established as a warrior.
And the one time that she actually did have conflict, yes, she succeeded, but she was thrown to the ground.
And she became the maiden in distress.
That's right. So it's like, yeah, we know. They tried to make her the character from Lord of the Rings, Yowen, going riding into battle with the helmet. They even have the shot where she puts her helmet down and the whole bit. I mean, if the film just feels derivative on every level. That's not to say I hated it, all right? Now, make it clear, I mean, the first half of the film kind of had me, and
first
I was watching
great.
It, and I was watching it, and I'm going, great. And Josh at one point actually leaned and goes, are you bored? I said, no, I'm not actually bored. I'm here with it.
Yep.
I was only bored for that first half an hour. When it actually got to...
where he got to Nottingham, and
Nottingham.
He got to meet her, and you know, and it's like, I'm going,
well,
oh, we might actually be leading to something. Well, exactly, set up.
The first half was good because it was setting up the new themes they were going for. That's what I thought.
The
this whole
is,
idea of sovereignty and kings abusing their power.
And this is actually a staple of Robin Hood. I mean, if you look at the Kevin Costner one, which we got a clip from, we can play a little bit of that as well. But the Kevin Costner one, which is not a great film.
Oh, no.
All right?
Not on repeat viewings.
It's not a great film. I watched it not so long ago, but it's fun.
Yes.
And it actually captured more of a flavor of Robin Hood than this one in many ways. I mean, at least it had the right elements involved.
Oh, dude, no, I'm sorry, but I would rewatch that film only for
Alan
Rickman.
Rickman as a
Alan
sure.
Rickman.
Cut his heart out with a spoon.
Alan Rickman is mesmerizing as this bizarrely angry, like, evil, conniving bad
with
guy.
The witch mother.
Exactly.
Wow.
I didn't even care.
He is evil. There is no question.
And once again, we look at this film and we go, Sheriff of Nottingham is traditionally the foe of Robin Hood. Two or three scenes where he's basically in the background
and
he does nothing.
Such a forgettable character.
Absolutely. When I saw the trailers, I thought, Mark Strong was the sheriff of Nottingham. Yeah. I thought that's what he would, and that would have worked. Yeah. You know, and so to have him off as this conniving, weird politics in this film really reek of the prequel of Star Wars. I mean, it really does reek of the whole, you know, we've got all the intermingling politics and
everything. We have the right to do this
in the background and all. And you sit there and go, it's a connection film, dude. Get on with it. I don't really care about all this. You know, I want to see arrows, and I want to see him split the arrow, and I want to see him do the Robin Hood stuff, you know?
Yeah, and there's only really the one Robin-esque kind of a shot where he does that one shot where he gets the guy at the end of the movie.
And there's that one scene in the middle of the film, and I actually thought this is where it was going to start. There's that one scene where they go to get the grain that's being taken away, and he's got the hood down and the arrow, and you know, they rob the grain train, and I thought, here we are, we're at Robin Hood, we're going to get started, right? He's starting to see the injustices and he's going to start doing it. No, that's it, one scene, that's all you get.
I think about it at the halfway point where it started to fall apart, I started thinking of the trailer we just watched and just thought, oh my god, I know where this ends. This is a prequel. And then there started to be major problems with it being a prequel because Russell Crowe is going grey. Maid Marian or Lady Marian looks, you know, she looks like 40. She looks Ridley old. Scott. And this is a prequel to a story about young people falling in love.
And let's not forget that Ridley Scott has a distaste for sequels. He is signed on to do the prequel of Alien only purely because it's something different that he can sink his teeth into. He doesn't want to do the whole Ripley thing.
But doesn't that scare you, though?
Actually, that's a debate for the after show. Yeah, but there's a lot of factors at play at the Alien thing. I'm actually kind of excited, and I'll tell you why. We'll dig into that in the after show. Right.
Okay. That's definitely enough.
Yeah, we'll dig into that.
Let's not forget that.
But he's got a distaste for sequels to start with. Secondly, he's got 4 films on the burner already, which means it's going to be a long time till a sequel to Robin Hood ever does come, if he's doing it.
And it has to make money first.
I actually think that once word of mouth gets out on this thing, I think it dies in the water. It had a good weekend, had a good strong opening in the States, but I think it's going to die in the water.
I think it's going to get its money back because it's an epic. I mean,
how much did it cost?
I couldn't tell you, but Kingdom of Heaven made its money back, didn't it? And that was atrocious.
After DVD release.
Really bad.
See, I'm one of the few people who actually liked Kingdom of Heaven.
I like the director's cut.
That's what I liked.
Because the original version is full of holes and it's shit.
Well, let's make this very clear. I often talk about the fact that I really like Kingdom of Heaven. I saw Kingdom of Heaven at the cinema.
Yep.
I thought it was okay, but it had a lot of problems.
Orlando Bloom.
It's the director's cut of that film. When I talk about the fact that I liked it, it's the director's cut.
Yeah,
fills in all those character moments.
Exactly, and those were in an epic.
And there's going to be a director's cut of Robin Hood, which actually has like an extra hour on the end.
Which is the real story of Robin Hood. We shot it all. We just cut it.
Let's just get our final thoughts on this, because obviously we were all in the same boat about this. And then we'll go into a quick spoiler zone, because we're going to talk about a couple of things in particular. But final thoughts. What would you recommend it to friends?
No.
All right, Josh.
I am actively starting a campaign to stop my friends from going to see it, like very physically.
Good. Nail. Okay.
Yes, I would actually say that if you really, really, really need to see this film, watch it on DVD.
You were so going to say download it.
Quite frankly, if you want to watch Robin Hood, to me, this is a better Robin Hood.
With my trusty quarterstaff.
Yes.
Actually, it's a buck and a quarter quarterstaff, but I'm not telling him that. Guard, turn, parry, dodge, spin,
oh, I love these.
Let's see now. Something amiss here. I'll run through it. Guard, turn, parry, dodge, spin, thrust. Now then. Guard, turn, parry, dodge, spin.
That's just genius.
I am so glad you put that in there.
That is Daffy Duck, of course, is Robin Hood. And I think if you're going to watch Robin Hood, that you're better off watching the Daffy Duck
version.
Have
much more fun.
You'll have much more fun. Quite frankly, if you really want to watch Robin Hood, go out and watch. If you want a modern take on Robin Hood, go ahead and watch Kevin Costner.
Prince of Thieves.
You know, Prince of Thieves is actually a better film.
Unless you loved it as a kid, don't go back and watch it ever, because it ruined it for me. I loved it as a kid, and I went back and watched it. I'm like, this is really bad.
Is it funny you say you loved it as a kid? I was an adult when it came
out. Oh, sorry, Dave.
Remember, I'm old. Right? I saw it at the cinema as an adult.
I apologize.
Right. Now, I would like to point out that there have been 111 screen incarnations of Robin Hood in the past. Whoa. So there's lots to choose from other than Ridley Scott's version.
Okay? I think it definitely falls to the lower end of the list.
Yeah, I think it does too. Yeah. So I think, my opinion is, it's not really one you need to rush up to the cinema and see. What we're going to do now, though, is we're going to jump ourselves into a spoiler zone. So if you are insisting on going to see this film,
we need a spoiler zone alarm.
We do. It's like
spoilers on, spoilers off.
All we need is Kenny Loggins. Spoiler zone. All right. So anyway, if you are insisting on going to see Robin Hood and you don't want it spoiled, you may want to pause and come back to us a little bit later on. It's not going to be a very long spoiler zone because we are running long, but I just want to get a few things out of my system, and I'm sure these two will do as well. All right. First of all, in spoilers, Russell Crowe fighting Mark Strong in the water at the end. He goes under, the boat's closing on him, and Josh heard me laugh, because of course the first thing that goes through my mind is he's going to come out of the water in slow motion, and of course there it came, and it's like I just started going, oh really? It's like by the time you reach the end of this film, it's like every cliche you could possibly do is now being brought into the fold. And of course, Arrow Cam at the end.
Well, the fact that
Kill Cam. Yeah, Kill Cam is just possibly my most hated bit of the movie.
Mark Strong did let out a laugh before he died. Did you guys see
that? Yeah.
I was like, that's awesome. You didn't even get to see him fall off the horse or whatever. I'm like, they're not surely setting him up for the sequel, are they? Like,
look, Robin, I survived. Yeah, but now you have to have a horse or something. That's it. Look, Mark Strong, I was going to bring up Mark Strong because this is two films in a row where I've actually been a little bit underwhelmed by Mark Strong. I love Mark Strong, don't get me wrong, and this is where it gets really frustrating.
What was the other one?
Sherlock Holmes. Because remember, I was a little bit underwhelmed on Mark Strong.
But then between that, we had Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass, he was excellent. I love Mark Strong. I think he is a fabulous actor who has a fabulous screen presence.
Love him.
But he has got to get better at picking his films because this was not his finest hour. He was a cartoon character.
He's sort of the Michael Caine of actors at the moment, isn't he? I'll just take any role. Give me anything.
Well, it's like my Star Is Rising. I have to be in everything. And it's like, no, you don't.
Well, he was in Babylon AD not so long ago, wasn't he?
I forgot he was in that.
So he's like, yes, give me anything.
That is a really bad film.
Yeah.
That is a really bad film. But, so Mark Strong, Cate Blanchett, and look, going into this film, I thought Russell.
By the way, I would just like to retract. I may have been a little bit harsh. She still has womanly angles.
Not a lot, though, because she's like a rake. The girl.
When I say that, she's just a flat board. Yeah. But you know, like she's that's a little bit. So
there is no.
When we went into this film, I thought Russell Crowe trying to play Robin Hood. This is like I don't know. A brick trying to be put into a wood house. It's not gonna work. He doesn't have charisma. He doesn't have all the elements. After the film is all finished, he's actually not the major problem in that relationship. The major problem is that Cate Blanchett is an ice queen who doesn't give him anything anyway. So the two of them together have no chemistry whatsoever.
No. Yeah.
And you sit there and go, Maid Marian is supposed to be this beautiful, feisty, spunky woman.
Everyone in the movie was supposed to be in love with her.
Absolutely. Like, she's supposed to be worth fighting a kingdom for,
Yeah.
And I didn't buy that with Cate Blanchett at all.
Nope.
Cate Blanchett was like, what's the point? Now, I have actually got a little clip here. We're going to play the whole thing, and I'll actually drop the sound off. I actually have a clip here from the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves trailer. And I'll just let this play while we're talking, because this was Maid Marian. Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio, who played Maid Marian in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, was beautiful and feisty and cocksure of herself. And okay, she didn't always get the accent quite right, but I would buy her as Maid Marian over Cate Blanchett at any time.
Russell Crowe didn't get the accent right for half of the film.
Russell Crowe can't do a British dialect. But ever noticed that?
He should have stuck to, remember in Gladiator, he just did his voice. And he was like this Roman general with an occasional Aussie accent. Like, just stick to that.
Well, what he did was he just neutralized off the accent as much as he could. Yeah. And that's what he has to do.
Yeah.
When he does his British accent, he's laughable. I quite liked Master and Commander, but his accent was laughable. I hated the Ridley Scott, Russell Crowe film, A Good Year. And one of the things about that film that is so awful is the fact that he's supposed to be playing a distinguished British gentleman, and his accent is fucking awful. All right, quite frankly, it's just you sit there watching it. Oh my God, what are you doing? You know, and as I said, we've talked about it before. Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe need to take a break. They need to take a break.
For the best.
For the best. I think it's just one of those. Look at this film. I want to watch this film again now after talking about the Russell Crowe one.
No.
It's not a great film, but
he doesn't do an English accent at all, though, does he? Just Kevin Costner being Kevin Costner.
Okay. No, he doesn't do. Yeah, he
I tries. Don't do accents.
He tries. He really does try. But his.
Can I just say, since we're in spoiler zone, his freaking speech at the meeting of all things is probably one of the worst speeches I've heard in a while.
You're talking about Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah. Lord of the Land. It was so flat, and there was no emotion in it, and he may as well have been reading from lines.
I can actually tell you where the film started falling apart for me. I said this outside of the cinema. The film started falling apart for me when he found the statue that his father made.
Mm.
And he, you know, broke up and put his hand on the concrete imprint, and all I could think was the hand across the wheat fields in Gladiator, you know. Mm. And also, it started falling apart for me when Max von Sydow, basically as the father, basically said, "I know your past," and all I was waiting for was, "You're my lost son," or something like that. You know, and it's like, oh, please.
That was where it just became generic story. Yes. You knew that there were no surprises left for you in the film once you got to that point.
Yeah,
you were
that's
just
right.
Like,
and that's
nothing
that was
is
the
going
turning
to be
point
worthwhile.
For that film where you just go, oh, this is just this is not good.
Yeah, and the fact that they tried to do a death of Lady Marian at the end bit, you know, like she's in the water, is she drowned? It's like, no, this is a prequel.
Yeah, she's got.
She's not dead.
And dude, even then, honestly, there was no emotion in me whatsoever. It's like she's standing there and he's holding her, and I'm just like, just wake up.
And even the battle scene felt lackluster, because here you have all the French army coming in on their you know, transports and all, but this little band, I mean, realistically, it was a little band compared to the number of French coming in. This little band of people come in and start fighting them, and the French king goes, oh, let's turn around. We'll fight another time. It's like,
dude, I just add that in the shots leading up to that, you see hundreds of boats like spanning out into the distance. And then when you actually look at how many people were on the beach, there may have been, what, like 1,000 total? Like maybe either side? And it's like, you watch that and he's got boats up the fucking wazoo.
And he turns around.
Why?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, fuck it. We're here. We've got, you know, very little food left. let's just take it.
Yeah. All right, now, let's address the elephant in the room, which is the last minute of this film. All right, now, the point is,
I compared that last minute to the last minute of episode 3 of Star Wars, where that was the only minute of the movie I actually enjoyed. It was like the movie where everything came together and became a prequel to what I had seen.
Yeah, exactly. My thought
could have been 1 minute film.
That's right. My thought on Facebook was, somebody said, what did I think about it? I said, well, the last minute of this film is the film I came to see. And you go through all this bullshit and nonsense of this film, and then you get to that last bit, and it starts with the king basically saying he's an outlaw.
Yep. Outlaw!
The proclamation going against the wall, and the arrow going between his fingers. Now,
Russell Crowe is not there.
No, he's not there. And the joke is, of course, in the ad, that's one of the first things you see in the ad, so it makes it look like it's going to be a Robin Hood film.
Yep.
But this is actually in the last minute of the film, and then we have the shot of all the merry men and the campsite in Sherwood Forest, and it's like they're training and practicing and eating, and you go, oh, this is Robin Hood.
Well,
also that
last minute had such a touch of Robin Hood with the fact that he wasn't there. That scene is so symbolic in the fact that it's that whole kind of concept of, you know, the law kind of being really anti him, but no one really knowing where he is or how to get hold of him. He's just this figment that just shows up. He was the myth. He was around, but never actually there. And that was the whole wonderment of Robin Hood. And it was just that one scene, and I was like, ha! Right. And that was the first time it dragged emotion out of me, because he wasn't there.
Yeah,
he wasn't on screen. I wasn't looking at Russell Crowe.
Brought a smile to my face.
Yeah.
And then they took it away from me.
See, that last scene to me.
And then
me
made Marion doing a fucking voiceover at the end. I'm sorry. What the fuck?
It felt out of place, that last scene. It didn't fit with that movie.
It felt like
someone.
And
I was like, yeah, okay, you've just done a link, but that you've just jumped from this really dark, I guess, Batman Begins type take on a really frivolous legend, and
they
you've turned
totally,
it into.
And all I could totally think had her sitting down writing a diary. That would have just made that scene even worse.
All I could think about the entire film was that it felt like Ridley Scott wanted to do a medieval tale, And he chose to do Robin Hood because it obviously had name branding.
Yeah.
But he really wanted to just do a medieval tale. All I could think is, why didn't he choose something like Cromwell or, you know, one of these other great medieval tales, which is about king making and wars.
Remove Robin Hood's name from it.
It's a medieval tale.
Being the fact that it's like him, why doesn't he just come up with something original?
Or that too. Now, we've run out of time, but Brian Hengeland was the one I wanted to bring up. This is the man who is a hit and miss complete writer. This is the guy who, in the same year, got nominated for an Oscar for L.A. Confidential and got nominated for a Razzie for The Postman. So, you know, this man is a really mixed writer, and in this particular case, he has not.
Oh, and just quickly, Little John was awesome.
Yes. Little John was awesome, and for those who recognize him, he's also in Lost. He's the mercenary in Lost in the season 4-5 series, and he was also the blonde in Wolverine. Sorry, I had to say it, but he's a really good actor. I like him a lot.
Friar Tuck was awesome as well.
Yes, and he's from Full Monty.
Ah, yes.
Dave from Full Monty.
But I thought he was great. The Merry Men and Friar Tuck were fantastic, and they just didn't have enough screen time. They were the most fun. I mean, when Friar Tuck runs in and throws the bees in, there you go, gentlemen, and then shuts the door. I mean, that was Robin Hood. That was fun. That was silly. That was like, as if you'd do that, but
that's what you wanted.
Exactly. That's
what
the feel of Robin Hood.
And you don't get that. So overall, not a good film.
Not
the film that we wanted it to be.
Find YouTube of the last 5 minutes.
Sorry?
Watch a YouTube video of the last 2 minutes, and you will have the best movie that you would have got out of that.
That's right.
The director's cut will come out. It will be a 2-minute film.
Actually, I'm really looking forward to reading. Hopefully, the guy does it. The abridged script of it. I think that will be. Have you guys read the abridged script website? Oh, he just does these little 10-page scripts of films, regardless of whether they're good, and just breaks it down what they're really trying to do. It's hilarious.
Oh, good.
We've got to get ourselves out of here, though, because it is, we're running long, and we've got the Little Geek coming up after the music. We've recorded his show, and the audio will be tagged onto the end of this. So we've got to get ourselves out of here. We will come back for the after show, though, if you'll join us, Nathan. Yes. We'll just do about 2 seconds of housekeeping. I don't have a lot of time. We're just going to say that if you agree or disagree with anything we say, you can send a voicemail to Sydney number 02-8011-3167 or feedback@geekactually.com is our email address. Just a quick couple of shout outs, just because we always have to do this. We have our friends over at Real Junkies. You can find them at weekendronin.com. It's another movie podcast which you might like to listen to, or of course the Movie Fan Cast over at moviefanhouse.com. I hate just to hate the name of their new podcast, but they're a really good show, though, so don't let the name let you down. And I am very sad to say that Brad Anderson has left the show, which is very sad. Big Bad Brad's life. But Charlie and Jesse continue on, and the show is still a lot of fun. And I do put a call out there. Brad, if you are around, you are always welcome to come onto our show as a guest. All right. We have another show, of course, Monday Night's Platforms. Josh, what's the game this Monday? Quick.
The game this Monday, we're actually doing some DLC games. We are doing the new Final Fight game, and we are also doing Afterburner Climax.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Platforms. You can watch that live Mondays, 8 p.m., or you can download the podcast on Tuesdays. Just look for Platforms in iTunes. Nathan, if people want to catch up with you on the web, how can they find out more about you?
You can visit my website, www.chimeralit.com.au, and good luck spelling that.
Just type it into Google, and Google will fix it if you screw it up.
And Josh, how can we find more about you on the internet?
Well, there's, of course, the Platforms fan page, and, of course, on the Geek Actually website as well, writing up articles on that, and, yeah.
Cool. And you can, of course, always find out more about me by going to davemcveigh.net, which is my personal site, or just go to geekactually.com. We've got lots of material up there to have a look at. And we're going to get ourselves out of here. Thank you very much for joining us, Nathan.
Thank you for having me, guys. Been a pleasure.
And hopefully you will come back to us. And Josh, we'll see you later.
You'll be here. Thanks. I'll just go wait in the corner until the next show.
He's furniture.
We'll see the closet until the next one.
All right. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week.
Welcome to a Little Geek Show. For episode 2 of the 14th of May 2010. I'm Nicholas McVeigh, the little geek.
And I'm David McVeigh, the big geek. And joining us is a very special guest. We have the co-host of Platforms Podcast and the co-host of the Geek Actually Podcast, Josh Philpott. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. This is only our second show and we've already got a guest. That's pretty wild. Yeah. How are you, Nicholas?
I'm great.
What's up today?
Friday.
I know it's Friday. What's up today? What are we doing?
Little Geek Show, absolutely.
The Little Geek Show, absolutely. What are we doing on this week's Little Geek Show? In fact, I know that we're reviewing Iron Man 2, but we have something else. What's the other thing we're doing today?
This week we're going to debut my new Lego movie, Superhero Madness.
Cool. I can't wait to see it. We'll actually play that in just a second. I think before we play that, though, I think we need to say, hi, Josh.
Hi.
What brings you here today?
Well, I actually downloaded the last episode, and I had a listen, and I wanted to be a part of it because I thought it was cool.
Cool. It's always nice to have someone in the studio with us. All right, so today, before we get to our review of Iron Man 2, first thing I want to say before anything is, for those who downloaded the last episode off of YouTube, thank you very much. Very kind of you.
Downloaded.
Viewed it, downloaded it, whatever. You know, you should bring it into your computer. It's downloading.
Yeah.
So I thank you all for coming and having a look at that. Yeah. And we'll push through this next one. We've got Iron Man 2, which we've done on the main show. Josh and I have done it, but it's your turn now. Yeah. So we'll find out what the 10-year-old's perspective on that is going to be. But I think before we go any further, I think we should say that there was a bit of a problem with the last show, and that is that YouTube didn't like us playing the trailer.
Why not?
They basically called us up on a copyright violation, and they didn't pull it. They just basically said, we think you've got copyrighted material. They identified it. Boy, I tell you what, the algorithms they're using are amazing because they identified it as How to Train Your Dragon, the trailer, out of the video clip. But I wrote back to them and said, we review films. It is being fair usage, blah, blah, and they've dropped it all. But for that purpose, today, when we play the trailer for Iron Man, we won't be running sound. We'll just be running image, and we'll just keep talking over it anyway because we ran out of time last week anyway. So just to let you know that the image was just going to play while we're talking about it. But we are going to play sound on Nicholas's new little film. Now, you're going to do one of these every show, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll try.
Cool. All right. So, and you've got some guests.
And starring these people. It's starring these
people. They're kind of little in the frame here, but what we've got is we've got the Lego figures for me and you.
Yeah. It looks exactly like you, by the way, Dad.
And we'll play the movie now, and people can see them a bit closer up, because when you actually see the movie, you'll see them nice and close. So this is Superhero Madness.
On the news, Red Mask is still on the loose. Police and new hero of the city, Green Ranger, are hunting him down. Wait, what's that? It seems that Red Mask is at the bank, with Green Ranger held hostage. No! That's terrible! Hey, I can be a superhero. Nice.
No one can stop me now.
Stop right there, Red Mask.
You're just a kid. You can't stop me.
Oh, really?
I got a gun. You don't.
Yes, I do.
But that's just a water pistol.
In news today, a kid saved Green Ranger and put Red Mask behind bars.
Well done, boy. You're a real hero.
Thanks, Dad.
Duty calls.
Did he just...
Awesome.
I think the fact that I can fly is probably my favorite thing.
Really? Not the red tights?
No. Well, the red tights I'm not sure about, but you know, I think it would be kind of scary to actually see me in red tights. There's a thought for you, isn't it? There's a thought for the day. All right, let's move on to this review today. All right, so we've got Iron Man 2, directed by Jon Favreau, Favreau. The film is written by Justin Theroux, based on the Marvel Comics character and one of your favorites, I believe. We have the cast of Robert Downey Jr. returning, Gwyneth Paltrow returning, Don Cheadle replacing Terrence Howard, Mickey Rourke, Scarlett Johansson, Sam Rockwell, and Samuel L. Jackson. And just as a brief synopsis, a sequel to 2008 hit, Iron Man has Tony Stark. Facing new challenges with his health, his blood is being poisoned by the very device keeping him alive. The government, they want the suit, and his company falling into disarray. He just doesn't have time for it. All of this in a new threat in the form of a disgruntled Russian genius, Rourke, who wants Stark dead. Summed it up okay? It's pretty much the same synopsis we gave on the Geek Actually show, but it does sum up the show, I guess. And the question is, what did you think?
I actually really like this one.
Yeah, me too. I have to say, I really enjoyed it. Now, you were not as... I'm talking to Josh, that is. Josh was not as quite as keen.
I loved the film for what it was. I didn't like it as much as I liked the first one.
Fair enough. Now, that's the question we've got for Nicholas, which is, better, same, or worse than Iron Man 1?
Same. I think you could watch them back to back.
I agree. I think it would make a good good bookends. Mm-hmm. I think you watch those two, and then you could even slot the Hulk in there, the Incredible Hulk. The second.
I am so looking forward when the Avengers coming out to watching all of them beforehand.
And Thor. And Captain America. Uh-huh. Just watching the entire series. I think that would be awesome. So, what was your favorite part?
I really like the race scene. You know, the one where
The Monte Carlo Grand Prix sequence.
Yeah, where Whiplash comes and crashes his car up.
Really good, and also contains, quite frankly, my favorite thing in the entire film, which is the briefcase. I think the briefcase armor is terrific.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what we've been waiting for two films.
Yeah.
Is to have him with it in a briefcase of sorts. Yeah. What did you think of Mickey Rourke? Because that's his big intro, basically. He's in the earlier scene, but that's his big intro. Mickey Rourke, for those who don't know, plays Whiplash, the Iron Man bad guy.
I thought he was pretty good as Whiplash. I never actually read any comics of Iron Man, so I don't know what Whiplash was like. So
your love of Iron Man really comes from
this film.
This film, the previous film, and the Avengers.
Yeah,
cartoons.
The Ultimate Avengers, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. That's cool. That's very interesting. Because I actually read a lot of Iron Man comics.
Hey, you guys have seen the cartoon Iron Man movie? The individual one?
Where he goes up against Mandarin and stuff.
Yeah.
Saw that. We're actually playing on screen right now. For those who are watching the YouTube, we've got the trailer running for Iron Man 2. This scene I loved. I actually wrote about that in one of my blog posts, which was actually the scene where he goes in to see him right after the race.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there with all his tattoos and everything. It's an awesome scene. I think it's a really good character scene between those two people. Mm. Scarlett Johansson. Now, quite frankly, I think she's babelicious, but what did you think of Scarlett Johansson?
I really liked the scene where she kicked everyone's ass.
Absolutely.
I like how she sprayed someone from some pepper spray.
The mace spray. The punctuation spray on that scene is awesome. She does all that and then just that one spray at the end, which is just fantastic. Question is, do you think she should get... There's been a lot of talk in the industry at the moment about spinning her off into her own film. Do you think she should... Do you think that character is strong enough to hold its own film?
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, I think because I do too. I think she would. I think she would. And look, quite frankly, after the whole controversy of Emily Blunt and all that sort of stuff, I actually think that Scarlett Johansson was perfect for it. I don't think Emily Blunt would have done nearly as good a job.
I have one little question for Little Gig.
Sure.
Did it bother you at all that they changed the character for what's his name?
Rhodey.
You know how he was a different person this time? Did you even think about it?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
He must have filled the role really well.
The big issue was, of course, was could Don Cheadle just step in and take over the role from Terrence Howard? And I've been listening to critics all over the place saying, I don't think he did as good a job, and there was much better chemistry between Terrence Howard. I don't think anybody really cares. Yeah.
I didn't, and I was interested to see if he did.
I don't think anybody really cared. I thought he did a good job. I thought Terrence Howard did a good job.
I really do think he did a good job.
Yeah, I think he did too. All right, so now the big issue with this film, and this is actually one I really wanted to ask you about because you're 10, obviously, which is that there is criticism against this film that the center of the film, the middle section of the film, slows down. There isn't enough action in the film because there's only really three major action set pieces in the whole film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And question is, from a 10-year-old's point of view, did you find it slowed down? Did you find You got bored.
I really liked the fact how he was getting a new heart thing and stuff.
Oh, so you were following the story. Yeah. Oh, there you go. So, okay. So we shouldn't worry about that part then, huh?
Nope.
All right. So last thing, question I would say is, what are your final thoughts on this film?
I think it's really good. I think everyone should go see it. It's it relates lots to the original, and yeah.
Does it make you want to see a third one?
Yes.
Does it make you want to see the Avengers?
Yes.
Yes. All right. For those out there who
I want to see Captain America movie. I really want to see that.
I'm curious about the Captain America movie. Mm. I'm very, very curious about the Captain America movie. I just, because it walks a fine line. Captain America could be really stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it walks a very fine line. So
are you excited for Thor?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Awesome.
And now we will say, we won't spoil it, but we will say, if you don't know already, and most people know by now anyway, but if you don't know, stay to the end of the credits. Yeah. Mm. There is a teaser.
You have to stay to the end of the credits.
Like the first movie, there is a teaser at the end for the next Marvel production. So do stick with it. The credits are very long on this one, though. Mm. So it is an investment to stay through the end, but it is worth it. All right. I think that brings us to an end.
Yeah.
I know. Flies by so fast. We're going to just remind people here how they can get in touch with you. Oh, now I've got to ask you, because Atomic Betty, one of our number one fans, who absolutely adores you and adores you on this show, said that after the last episode of Little Geek, she has a new measure for rating movies after something you said. She said, does the film make my feet tingle? So I have to ask, does Iron Man 2 make your feet tingle?
No.
I think what Nicholas was referring to was the dizzying heights of How to Train Your Dragon and Up.
Yeah.
Was because of the extremely high scenes is what was making your feet tingle.
Yeah.
There's nothing in Iron Man that really makes your feet tingle, but recommended to everybody. All right. If you want to write to Nicholas and pass on messages or anything for this show, you can send it to feedback@geekactually.com. We also have a voicemail line, which is at 02-8011-3167. Please send us your comments. Nicholas would love to hear from you. Just a reminder for the YouTube watchers who are only watching this on YouTube, the audio version of this will be tagged to the end of the Geek Actually podcast. So you might want to listen to that, because if this is too long, some of this will be abridged. It will be unabridged on the audio version. So just to let you know that that's all there. And I think without any further ado, I'm going to say I'm Dave McVeigh. Thank you very much.
I'm Nicholas McVeigh.
And Josh, thank you very much for joining us.
Not a problem, dude.
And we'll see you on the main show.
Yep.
All right. Bye, all.
Bye.